lot of people who weren't happy to get other lectures.
I'll talk about smaranam, in a sense, which means remembrance of the Lord, or at least something in connection with that. As we know, in the definition of devotional service given by Guru Goswami, we have anusilanam, or cultivation favorable towards Krishna. And I also explained that that meant two types of things. One is engaging the body and mind and senses favorably towards Krishna, that is sadhana bhakti. And then on a higher level, it means actually going beyond body and mind and senses, etc., and serving through one's spiritual emotion, as bhava and prema. It's called bhava rupa, as opposed to chesta rupa, activities. And both are called anusilana. However, in the beginning stages, basically we are engaging the body and mind. And the definition of sadhana bhakti is to utilize the senses, triti sadhya, in order to attain bhava, the stage of bhava where we actually have spiritual emotions. And we also studied how we engage the different senses, like the eyes and the ears and the sense of touch and the nose, etc., in the whole body, in Krishna's service. That part is straightforward. But we also see that Rupa Goswami has pointed out that the sum and substance of all these rules is remembrance of the Lord. To remember the Lord and never forget Him. Which means that the mind also is very important. Of course, some of the angas of devotional service involve the mind, like meditation, and smaranam, etc. But ultimately, it appears as if all the angas that we mentioned in Vaidhi Bhakti, they're actually pointed towards remembrance of the Lord somehow or other. We have to remember the Lord through the activity, whether it's hearing or chanting or deity service or whatever. Somehow the mind has to also concentrate on the Supreme Lord. So we know from Bhagavad Gita that the mind is the friend and also the enemy of the jiva, the atma. Because the uncontrolled mind can lead us down into the material world and more bondage. And the mind can also lead us upwards towards spiritual life and understanding of our spiritual nature and help us in spiritual progress if we utilize the mind in a proper way. But if we control the mind and use it in one way, we get good results. And if we don't control the mind and we let it go, then we get other results. So therefore, the mind is very important. And what is the function of the mind? That is, to gather the sense impressions and make some sense out of it, and to have memory, recall. That is, we have experiences and we categorize it as good or bad or neutral and stick it somewhere in our mind. And then again, we recollect those things later on for certain purposes. So this is a function of the mind, memory and things like that. So we know that the mind is very important. In chapter 8 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna emphasizes that what you think of when you die, that determines your next body. So in other words, the thoughts that are in your mind will determine your future. And of course, the thoughts which are in your mind when you die are the sum total of the thoughts which you've accumulated throughout your whole lifetime. And of course, previous lifetimes also. Yeah? So those things to which you become most attached in this lifetime, those will be the subject of your thoughts when you die. And then you will attain such a position in the next lifetime. So the type of body in this material world that we get is determined by our thoughts. And of course, Krishna also says that whatever you worship, you attain. If you worship bhutas, you go to bhutas. If you worship ghosts, you go to ghosts. If you worship pitras, you go to the pitras. If you worship devas, you go to devas. And if you worship me, you come to me. So we can get material results somewhere we direct our mind. That is, we can go to Devaloka or Ghostloka or whatever. And we can also get spiritual results and go to Krishna by worshipping and directing our mind in a certain direction. So the mind can be used to direct us anywhere in the material world, and the mind can also be used to direct us to the spiritual world. So that is why, therefore, the mind is very important in the devotional service. You can take it out of the material world, you can take it to Krishna also. Mind, of course, is material, as is the body, but they're also useful to us in our spiritual life by Krishna's mercy. And of the two, the mind is considered more important than even the body. And because Rupa Goswami says, the purpose of all these activities of the body and the senses is to remember the Lord. So the mental process is very important in the devotional service. We know that Prahlad got his success by Smaranam, or remembrance of the Lord. He was constantly thinking of the Lord, and he became glorious for that. And the Lord appeared as Narasimhadev to save him from his difficulties. So therefore the mind is very important. Of course, we know that the process in Kali Yuga is not meditation, which is a mental process, because that is very difficult for us to approach. We cannot really meditate. Meditation means qualification. And before you do meditate, you have to control the mind. It's not that you control the mind through meditation. It's the other way around. Of course, in the modern world, we think, I'm unpeaceful, my mind is uncontrolled, therefore I'll meditate, and I'll be able to control my mind that way. But that is reverse logic. Before you meditate, you have to control the mind. It's not that controlling the mind is the result of meditation. So there's a specific process called the Asanga Yoga process to deal with this, to gradually control the mind. And when you control the mind, and you have pratyahara, dharana, then you get dhyana, meditation. So, except for meditation, just through meditation, is quite an advanced process. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati tells a story to illustrate how we tend to go reverse the whole thing. He says it's like the foolish farmer. He looks in his rice field and he sees one of those white birds with the long legs, crane in the field. And he's looking at that crane and he's thinking, I want to catch it. But he knows that if he starts going towards it in the field, the crane will hear him coming, see him coming, and he'll fly away. So he's thinking, how can I catch that crane? So he thinks and thinks and thinks, and then he comes up with a brilliant idea how to catch the crane. So, therefore he has a little bit of funny logic how he's going to do it. So he thinks, what I will do is I'll get some ghee. I'll get some solid ghee. And I'll stick it on top of the bird's head. And when the sun comes out at noontime, then it'll melt the ghee on the bird's head. And when it melts, it'll get in his eyes. And when it gets in his eyes, now I'll be able to catch him. So in order to put the ghee on the bird's head, of course, you'd have to get that close to him. So So he's rather a foolish person in going reverse process. So like that, people are foolish and they think that by meditating, then I will be able to control my senses. But actually, first you have to control the senses, then you can do the process of meditation. So therefore, direct meditation is not so practical for the people of the day. So how are we to direct the mind then? So of course these other processes are there, all the processes of bhakti are there, like deity worship, etc. And Rupa Goswami says ultimately in these, mind is also important there so we can remember the Lord and attach ourselves to the Lord's mental process. But of all the processes, the chanting of the holy name, Nam Sankirtan, is considered the most effective way of remembering the Lord. This is Kirtan is there, name of the Lord is there, but with the name of the Lord we say the name so that it hears using our tongue. We hear the name, that is Ravana, and we also think of the name, and through the name we think of the Lord, that is Smarana. So therefore the process of Kirtan also involves Ravana and Smarana. So through the process of kirtan, then we are also utilizing the mind. We can chant the name, of course, without thinking. We can chant the name accidentally. We can just, or hear the name accidentally also. It all has effect. It's all effective. And the name is so powerful that however you hear it, it is effective. It'll do something to you spiritually speaking. It'll do something, have some effect. But these stages where we're not attentive and we have no knowledge about Krishna at all, this is called Namabhas. It is not pure chanting. It is a covered name. Name is all pure, but it doesn't have the full effect. It's called covered. That is Namabhas. So in the Namabhas state, we get some effect. The effect is we get purified of our karma, sinful reactions, desires, etc. This must happen. It's purified.
Thank you.
Hare So, that is so, but by Namabhas alone, you cannot get perfection. So therefore, it is wise to chant purely. If you chant purely, then you can attain the lotus feet of Krishna. If you chant Namabhas, you cannot get the lotus feet of Krishna. You can get purified of your karma, you can get liberation. You cannot get Krishna. That is, you cannot get prema. It is only through pure chanting or sudanam that you get prema. In other words, Namabhas means we have ignorance and we have desires. Things. Ignorance of Krishna, ignorance of bhakti, ignorance of the goal, etc. And when we have knowledge, that is sambandhigyana vidya prayojana, then we can chant purely. So when we chant, therefore, and we have good knowledge of Krishna, then the effect is different. And if we chant ignorance, we get another result, that's Namabhas. So therefore, we have to utilize the mind as much as possible, not only for chanting, but also for understanding so much about Krishna. And when we chant Krishna with knowledge, then when we hear the name of Krishna, then we'll also remember a different Krishna than when we have no knowledge of Krishna. So as I said, in any case, the name is powerful. And if you don't know Krishna, you don't even know what the word Krishna means. Still, it has effect. Had effect for Ajamil, and he was saved from his hellish punishment. His karmas were destroyed. But if you consciously chant the name of Krishna with devotion, understanding who Krishna is, then you got much more than that. Not only get reduction of karmas or destruction of karmas, but you also begin to develop your attraction to the Supreme Lord Krishna. So this is actually what we want. We don't want just destruction of karmas, but we also want to develop our attraction to Krishna. So if we get that knowledge and we chant using that knowledge or someone began the process of bhakti, then we can fix the mind nicely on Krishna and we'll get very wonderful effects. So therefore we have to utilize the mind to full extent in our devotional activities, including the process of chanting. And then we'll get, we come to the level of pure chanting and progress very rapidly towards the goal of life. So the process is very, very, process of remembrance of the Lord and utilizing the mind is very important for the devotional service. Generally, of course, if we do an activity, the mind has to go somewhere along with the activity, especially if we're learning the activity. You have to make the mind go along to make it concentrate. But then after a while, we can do the activity and the mind won't concentrate. It'll do something else. And we'll keep doing the activity and the mind will be somewhere else. So mechanically, we can do an activity, the mind will be somewhere else. So that can happen in our devotional activities also. When we get used to the activity, then we'll do the activity, the mind will be elsewhere, thinking something completely different. So then the effect is less because of that. There's no remembrance of the Lord in the activity. It's for the Lord, that is good, but the mind is not there. So therefore the effect is less because of that. So, of course, Krishna says, you think of me and you come to me. So therefore we have to practice and utilize all of our efforts to try to concentrate the mind upon the Supreme Lord. And utilizing the body helps. If we're utilizing the body for Krishna, then it is likely it's easier to direct the mind there also. So we do two things. We direct the body and we direct the mind also together. That is the most effective process. So we do the chanting, that involves the body, that is the tongue. But we also involve the mind. And to just use the mind, it also can be done, but it is more difficult to do. It's a more elevated process just to use the mind itself. So if we use two together, the body, bodily activities, including chanting, and the mind, that is most of the process for us. That's where we get remembrance of the Lord as far as. So this is useful in all bhakti, it is useful in sadhana stage, and bhav stage, and even prema stage. Utilization of the mind is there. In fact, as one advances, the mental cultivation becomes stronger. As we advance, therefore, generally the mind becomes more involved in the Supreme Lord. On the Raganuga stage, which is also sadhana bhakti, the mind is more involved. We're doing two things. We're doing the external process, we're also doing the internal process. And on the stage of bhava, as I said, it's bhava rupa bhakti, where the emotions, the mental states, which are ultimately, of course, spiritual, but reflected in the material mind also, they become more prominent. So in all stages, the mind takes a very, very great role in devotional service. So even in sadhana bhakti, though we are concentrating on activities, we should not forget that we should also engage the mind. And somehow or other, in all of our activities of devotional service, also direct the mind towards Krishna. If not anything, at least to offer the activity to the Supreme Lord favorably and try to attempt to please the Lord with that activity. And if possible, remember the form and qualities of the Lord also.
Oh, if we have a long-term plan, then if we receive that, we'll neglect our duties.
Well, we have to use discretion and balance things out, because we have a long-term plan, but we always don't know what is most practical for us to achieve that long-term plan also. So therefore, we will have to consider the advice of others also, not just think that, you know, we're headed for premise, so therefore I'll neglect everything and take a chance all day long, something like that. It's good to want to do that, of course, but generally, it's a little difficult for most people. Nevertheless, we should keep in mind the goal. If we lose sight of the goal, then of course we're lost. And that is why we have what is called prayojana, or the goal. We have to understand what the goal is. If we have a process, but we don't have a goal, what's the use of it? It's unheard of, I think, even in the material world, to have a process without a goal. If you're a businessman and you have a method of doing things, but you don't have a goal, you don't go very far. Where's that goal? Even if the process is perfect. If you don't understand what the goal is, then the process of development loses. It's not practical anymore. So therefore, we do have to understand what the goal is, definitely. And all the activities that we do, we can push them towards that goal, whatever they are. Mind the same as the brain? No. Even scientists say that. A very eminent brain scientist. He just said no after doing all of his brain operations and everything. His conclusion was the functions of the brain and the functions of the mind are not exactly the same thing. Some areas overlap, definitely. But he said they're not the same thing, ultimately. Not the same thing. And of course, we do know that some functions of the mind, or something it is, something that does things and remembers things, functions independently of the brain, because the brain may be dead even. Someone gave an example, I don't know if it's true or not, someone gave an example like this. Some pilots, German pilots in the war, they went over to England and bombed, you know, bombed from England. And then the British, of course, shot them. And actually, they shot their whole head off, these two pilots, the German pilots. But what happened was the pilots managed to direct their plane all the way back to Germany and landed on the airfield and everything. And when they opened the cockpit, they found they had no heads. They managed to get the plane all the way back to the base somehow or other. So the functions of the body seemed to be operating somehow all that way, and the observation, everything, to accurately land the plane. Everything took place without a brain. So that's a kind of extreme case of that. But there's other examples like that also. Where, of course, near-death experience, they're brain dead, practically speaking. When people have a near-death experience, clinically they're dead. The brain is not functioning. But yet they do have observation, memory, etc. during that period when they're supposed to be dead. And they come back to life again, unexplainably, and they have memories in that period. So who's remembering them? Technically, there's nothing should be there because the whole brain has been destroyed. It's stopped. So all the functions should not be there, and there should be no experience at that time. But yeah, there is experience.
Is the brain more the actual physical bodily?
Yeah, the bodily manifestation of the, which interacts, obviously, with the mind substance, just like we have senses here. But these are not also the whole sense, because we do have subtle senses in the subtle body, and therefore you can go out of your body and perceive things also. Yeah? If you're in dream state, then you're perceiving things without these eyes and senses. Yeah? And if one does astral travel, then one is perceiving without this particular body, which is stuck here in this physical space. And if you're dying, and you have hellish experience after you die, you have an experience. You're feeling and you're seeing hell and everything, but it's not in this body. So in this way, we have subtle senses also. So likewise, we have a subtle mind also, as opposed to just the gross brain mind. So both are existing, and they interact, of course. Obviously, they're kind of related to each other.
The example when duck Shiva replaced Daksha's head with a goat.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was a different brain.
Different brain, but the same person, yeah. He had the same memory there. So subtle body remained the same, though his body somehow got changed around. That's a good example.
When the brain was shot after the German pilot, then very little the mind. The mind is not in the brain, but in the...
Yeah, the mind is not exactly synonymous with the brain. It exists in the brain. In other words, the subtle body is there. Even if your brain gets shot off, your subtle body is there. The mind is still there. But it's disconnected from this brain, probably. So still the functions, how it happens, I don't know, but somehow the functions, the subtle body was able to... Yeah, direct the physical body to do certain things, in spite of it being finished, of the brain being finished. Oh, I don't know what it was, the details, but anyway, maybe it wasn't all close, so they had to shoot through there and shoot the heads off somehow. Anyway, they were surprised when the plane landed and there were two bodies without heads on them. People that don't know anything. Oh, I see. On spiritual and not good on chemical. Well, yeah. Of course, sometimes we have to, we do have material bodies, etc. So sometimes we have to relate to the material bodies also, to some degree. The main thing is that we should not be carried away on the gross level completely. We can't get too involved with the material body. At least somehow it has to be directed back to the system. But as I said, we have to take, as long as we have a material attachment, it's attachment to the body, then to some degree we have to take care of that body or the mind also. So therefore, for instance, if one is married as a grihastha, then he has to support a family. He cannot say, I'm just, spiritual. He has to support the family in so many things. And that means emotional support, etc. All has to go there also. And once it's been called Maya, then it means it has to be done. And therefore, you have to speak in certain ways to do that, which is not completely spiritual also problem. So therefore, everyone has that little bit of material attachment, whether it's a brahmacharya or whatever, or a grihastha. So therefore, something we have to deal with in the body also. Can't be 100% spiritual beginning. That is the ultimate goal, of course. Therefore, one who's in the highest state, he only speaks about Krishna. Only about Krishna. He won't talk about anything else. But that's a natural state, not the artificial state. At the same time, if you consciously indulge in material thoughts, agramya katha, then that is also detrimental for us. We get carried away with that, and we get further entangled. Basically, Chapter Rupa Bhakti and Baba Rupa Bhakti. These are two types of cultivation of Krishna. Chapter Rupa, on one hand, is sadhana rupa, that is sadhana bhakti. There's also chesta rupa on the higher stage of bhava prema that is called anubhavas. Anubhavas are activities you do even with the body, but on bhava prema stage. But they are the result or reflection of bhava, which they're instigated by bhava. Whereas in sadhana bhakti, we're doing the activities with our using our intelligence to control the mind and the body. Bhava, that these actions take place and singing and dancing, etc. It's like a spontaneous sequence of spiritual emotion. But they're still considered Shakta. Well, on the sadhana level, at least, but the Chesha on also on Bhava level, Anubhava, they are spontaneous results of emotions, but they're activities of the body. A Chesha, we can say, is activities of the body. The body. And then in sadhana form, we're doing it using our intelligence, and then frame on Bhava level is coming from the emotion itself, Bhava. That's the Anubhava.
And sadhana level is even.
Yeah. In other words, it's not completely spontaneous. We chant because because scripture says we should chant, Guru says we should chant. So we chant that way.
And what is the activity which we do mechanically in the body?
Oh, that ultimately is due to intelligence. Why do we do it mechanically? Because of course we told ourselves to do it before, so therefore we do it. Still some intelligence is involved there. Beginning of the year, but it's in a general sense. That is the nature of sadhana. We get some knowledge, some bandhagyan, but it's not realized knowledge. So we know something about Krishna. We know that he's blue. We know he has a peacock feather in his head. He plays the flute. But it's, of course, on an intellectual level, in one sense. But that is what sadhana is. We got some idea, and we control the mind and the senses, etc., using that. And why do we accept it in the first place with our intelligence? Because of faith, a little faith is there. So that's the only thing that holds us in the space, which gives us the intelligence to do the things. That's how. But with the process, then the faith will deepen until we get a realization of the goal. So it's the faith which keeps us in there and pushes us towards the goal, which we don't quite know fully. Faith in Shastra.